Welcome, Voltron fans. You are listening to Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. I am your host, Mark Morrell, and joining me now is my co-host, Greg Tyler.
Hello, Mark Morrell. Hello, fellow Voltron fans. Welcome to Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast.
How are you doing, Greg?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
Well, I just wanted to say that we've had some pretty cool guests recently.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Namely, Bex Taylor Klaus, which was really cool. And, of course, our Voltron fan artist spotlight, Mel.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to have our next guest be a surprise for the fans.
Yes.
Something that they wouldn't be expecting, per se.
Yeah, and I'd say that this fits that bill, doesn't it?
So, in being that we wanted our guest in this podcast to be a surprise, when you release the podcast,
mm-hmm.
people are going to know because it's in the title.
Yeah, that kind of ruins the surprise.
And when you announce it on Twitter, Facebook, and all these other places, we kind of have to let you know what the title of it is, you know, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so now that the cat's out of the bag, or the cow's out of the barn,
uh-huh.
Can you tell everybody who our special guest is here?
Yes, none other than the line producer of Voltron Legendary Defender, Benjamin Kaltenecker.
Yes, so that's awesome. The very first name that you see in the end credits when you get finished watching an episode on Netflix.
That's right. And Benjamin Kaltenecker has gotten some notoriety for being the namesake of a cow from the Space Mall episode of Voltron Legendary Defender. And we'll be talking with the human Kaltenecker, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Right. So we can't wait to talk to him, so why don't we bring him on?
Let's do it.
Coming on to the program right now is line producer Benjamin Kaltenecker. Welcome, Benjamin.
Hey, thank you guys very much for having me. It's definitely an honor and a privilege to be able to talk with you guys.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Thanks for coming.
Obviously, we have to address the elephant in the room. Or should I say the cow?
Yes, the good old cow.
How did you get named after the cow from Space Mall?
I remember reading that script and getting to that part and going, oh, geez, so I guess I'm going to be famous in the Voltron world for being a cow. So it may be that as the line producer, I'm the one they always come to when they need extra money to do something. So I didn't know if it's like milking the cow coming to ask me for things. So I didn't know if I should be offended by it. Like, guys, what do you think that I am to this production? But talking to the guys, they're just like, well, Kaltenecker. We knew we wanted to, you know, give a little bit of love to a lot of different people that work on this show. So I think it worked in naturally. And I'm originally from Columbus, Ohio. And I think my town has maybe outgrown it, but we used to be called a cow town. If you would be flying into Columbus International Airport, one of the last things you could do is walk by a little convenience store there, and they would have T-shirts that would say, nothing tips like a cow. You know,
so nice.
I think it's a proper homage to my hometown and also how it, you know, partially utilizes my last name. My last name has always been mispronounced my whole life, so I also think it's really cool that a lot of people hopefully are going to know how to properly pronounce my last name.
That's a plus. You know,
so it definitely is, and the cool thing is if you meet another Kaltenecker that's, you know, in the United States, the chances are very good that I'm related to them, so it's, you know, it's not a super common name here, but yeah, so it's a name that I'm proud of, And God bless the writers and Joaquin and Lauren for making it famous now. But there is a little bit of trivia or an Easter egg for you guys on the actual cow design.
Oh.
Is that the tattoo or the branding?
It is, yes. So when I was in college at the University of Dayton, I decided to change my name. Instead of going by Ben Kaltenecker, I thought I would just go by B. Jammin. It's pretty ridiculous. And what's even more ridiculous is I decided to come up with a symbol that stood for my name.
Nice.
And that symbol that I came up with in college is actually the branding symbol on the cow. So
that is amazing.
That was the one thing I told him. I said, guys, if you're making me a cow, you better at least put the Bjammin symbol on that cow. So you'll see that. That's a little bit of Easter egg. That it's a throwback to my old college days when I would put that on T-shirts and things like that. So
now that's hilarious. I love it because, you know, it's so you on the cow physically. I also love that you're a UD alum. I am also. I'm actually from the Dayton, Ohio area. So
follow up. Oh, wow, man. Wow, yeah. Very cool. Yes, I was just back in the Midwest this past weekend. I had my brother graduate from Ohio State this weekend. I also had a brother graduate from Marion University in Indianapolis. And that same brother who graduated from med school became a husband on this Monday. So we were just back there with my wife and I in that awesome cold and rainy area of the Midwest. It was nice a couple days, but when we left, I was happy to come back to LA, but coming back, it ended up being more cloudy and rainy here than where we left. So
that's funny.
Very cool.
So how did you come up with the Bjammin design?
You know, I would sit there in class and figure out how to autograph my name. Totally ridiculous. I know everybody's going to hate me and think I'm some cocky jerk on here. I really wasn't. I was just bored a lot of times in class, but it just kind of came that I wanted to do like a B, an apostrophe, and a J. And so I would mess around with different ways of all three of those things coming together. And that's where it came from. It's pretty ridiculous, I know. And it's just something as a little thing I wanted to create. I ended up doing sketch comedy shows and things like that in college. And I wrote a show called Bjam Mania, and so I wanted to come up with something as a logo for that show, and that's where I created the Bjammin symbol from. So,
well, that was so cool, and it's so fun to talk with a fellow flyer. That's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. So, wow, really cool, man. So
it's a small world.
It is. Wow, very cool.
All right, so you are immortalized as Kaltenecker the cow now. And you also were able to introduce a episode of Voltron 84.
Oh, yes. Yes, I got to do that. Yeah, that was fun.
That was The Secret of the White Lion.
It was an amazing episode as a kid, and it was really cool that I actually got to talk about that one. Because they basically, for that process, they reached out to us and said, hey, who's interested in talking and what are some of, you know, what are your favorite episodes from growing up? And that episode really stuck out to me as a kid. It was the first time that I had ever seen a character crucified. So Allura is actually put on a cross in that episode, and she's kind of left to, you know, whatever torture, whatever they're going to do to her in that episode. I remember that, like, that being like a, whoa, what the heck is going on here? So it was really cool that I actually got to introduce it and get to talk about it. It definitely was an episode that stuck out to me. And I remember, you know, it was also a really pivotal episode in that they were looking to find out who is going to, you know, take over the Blue Lion and be that paladin for that. So a lot of awesome memories, but that was one that definitely stuck into my head. So I was really excited when I got to pick that one to talk about. So I was glad nobody else chose it.
That's cool. I remember from that episode, in addition to the imagery that you described with the Allura being tied to the crosses, as she's running away from the castle, she tells the guards that, you know, she's looking for her mother. And the guard said, her mother, but she's dead. And you just don't hear people say dead in cartoons, even today.
No. Yeah. It definitely had a lot of that going on. The other thing that was so burnt in my memory is just the use of color and the use of changing up of color to kind of show you what's a dream world, what's a real world. Because at that age when I was watching, I hadn't seen other cartoons that really utilize that idea of color and, you know, to express whether they're conscious or unconscious or whether they're going through some type of trial or tribulation. And so that also stuck out to me really strongly back in those days. My younger days of sitting there eating my cereal and watching my cartoons. So it's I actually remember the first time I saw Voltron. And, okay. and it's I was sitting at my grandma's house, and she had a little 13-inch black and white TV, you know, with the tiles that you clicked, you know, one was the UHF channel or whatever.
Right.
And I'm sitting on the kitchen table, and I just flipped through, and I don't know how I timed it so perfectly. I must have just gotten home from school, and I go to turn it on, and I just see the intro to that original Voltron series, and I was hooked from that moment on. So, you know, getting to work on this show now, and, you know, the fan that I was as a kid, it just really is so awesome to think that I would get to work on it, and I would actually get to talk about one of my favorite episodes on a Netflix thing that, you know, my parents and my siblings and all the family, they love to see that. They think it's so cool. So
for fans of Benjamin out there, and you don't have to think of Carlton Ecker as a cow anymore, because you can actually see him at the beginning of that episode, Secret of the White Lion. So you can actually see him in action talking about why this is one of his favorite episodes. But one of the things that you said in that was that it was groundbreaking, and that you wanted to include those types of groundbreaking things in this new show. So what things in Voltron Legendary Defender would you consider groundbreaking?
You know, the thing that was groundbreaking to me for a series like this was that we really were trying to give a texture to each character so that you are knowing that much more about them. So you're hopefully getting to know more about, you're getting to see these characters really develop in an action series, as well as just how well I think that we are integrating the 2D and the CG, and just how amazing our After Effects artists are with all of the screens and all of the effects that you guys are seeing throughout this, that when we started this, and we knew our show is considered like a hybrid 2D show. So it's a hybrid between 2D and CG. Mm-hmm. And for us to have this show work, we knew that we needed to have the right tune shaders. We needed to have the right studio animating this to really bring this show to life and to allow those integrations of the 2D and the CG to work in this, you know, in this way. So for us to be able to make that happen while we're also really trying to round out as many characters as we can, so that you're understanding more backstory of each character, and each character has a voice and they have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And doing that in an action show that's, you know, a fantasy in space and, you know, about a gigantic robot that, you know, is powered by quintessence and made from things that you've never heard of before. So, you know, being able to combine seriousness and comedy and the look that you have, and like I mentioned, just the amazing After Effects work that Studio Mir does on this, it really does add all the sprinkles and icing to a cake that we all think tastes pretty good.
I want to touch very quickly on the hybrid nature of the series, the 2D, 3D nature of the show. That's one of the things that I immediately noticed, even in the production photography or the stills, where you've got, you know, looking up super close at the lions. I remember Yellow Lion in particular with all the little, the dings and the scrapes along its mouth and the head. And just looking at the quality and thinking, this is a 3D mesh that has been tune rendered. I mean, it looks just gorgeous. I mean, it looks like a cartoon, a traditional cartoon. And yet I know it's not. It's just amazing.
Well, this is where I can give a special shout out to one of my fellow coworkers here, the wonderfully talented Christine Bion. I would like to take credit for having her come join us on The Legend of Korra back in the day. I can't fully take credit, but I remember we had seen her portfolio and we'd seen a bunch of other people's portfolios. And when we were going through them, we tested a bunch of people and we hadn't heard from her. And we had heard from some other people and they turned in some really good stuff. And so we were really close to hiring someone else. And I said, I just said, let me reach out to her one more time, because we were ready to pull a trigger. We needed another character designer to come in on Cora. And I'm like, let me just reach out to her one more time. And they said, okay, but if we don't hear from her by now or by tomorrow, we're going to offer it to this person. And I think I got in touch with her like on Facebook or something like that. And again, I didn't know this girl from Adam, and I just reached out, and she took a test, and we were blown away. So that got her in the door to The Legend of Korra. And then when I was on Korra, and I was about to, you know, I had gotten out of my contract at Nickelodeon, and I had kind of thrown up a very hypothetical curveball to her, or softball to her, and said, if by chance, you know, I were to go work on a show that featured a large lion made out of robot lions, and you had the chance to, you know, when Korra ends, you're looking for something else to do, might you want to come over and join us? And I remember she knocked a bunch of napkins off of my desk in my office and was super stoked and excited. So fast forward to her coming on and just, you know, the attention to detail that she had and the amazing design that she did. And then I, you know, it just watching her work and seeing, you know, the effort and stuff that she puts into this, and then Joaquin and Lauren and Ryu also looking at that stuff and adding little details here and there. And then the amazing job that like the hub team here at DreamWorks does with these CG assets. We use Technicolor for some of these over in India to help build some of these assets. And we have a hub team here at DreamWorks that just does amazing stuff with it. So it really is an awesome collaborative effort that gets to this, you know, this level of detail and this level of care and love that all these people put in to create what you guys are noticing. So I'm happy that you got to notice it, because we love that. We love that there's little dings and things here and there, that it's not perfectly shiny, that this robot lion that has been around for years and has gone through, you know, plenty of battle damage would have some little scrapes and things like that. So thanks for noticing that.
Well, thanks for explaining it.
When you first did the Rise of Ultron, Andrea Romano told us that a number of you've got to see a theater size screen and everything when you got to see that first Rise of Ultron.
We did. Yeah, it was over at the DreamWorks Theater over on the main campus. We're located about a mile away from the main campus.
Okay.
Because that's mainly when we started up the TV division, there wasn't space for us over on the main campus. So we basically rented out a bunch of floors in a big building in Glendale. So yeah, so we got to go over for like the Voltron screening and getting to see it on the big screen and getting to see it in the 5.1 stereo, you know, hitting you and just, you know, sorry, you guys have to see it on your, you know, normal environments, because it is very amazing to see it on the big screen. So we got to see it there. And then we also went over to visit Studio Mir in South Korea, in Seoul, and we brought the episodes with us there, and we got to screen it with them as well in a theater. And that was also an awesome and amazing experience.
Wow.
That is cool. The real thing that Andrea Romano said was that just the visuals were so breathtaking, and this could actually be a movie, is what she said. She said it's so clean and crisp and everything, and it's just stunning, and it's like HD style and everything. So to be able to say that just a regular TV show could be a movie, that just says it all for what you guys are doing and what you're putting together here and all those things that you had mentioned previously.
That's what happens when you have Joaquin, Lauren, and Ryu and the amazing team that we have. And then we're paired with our amazing team over at Studio Mir, you know, and we've developed such a good relationship with them. And they really are a studio that puts their best foot forward and really cares about the production that they're making. And the other thing, too, with the show, you have so many people that are fans of the show, that we're willing to put all that extra time and effort into, you know, making something that we really want to watch, something that we really are proud of, you know, distributing to the rest of the world. And so what differentiates a lot of times is the drawing count that you have in these episodes. And Mir really goes above and beyond to, you know, have a high drawing count. And again, put so much effort into all the little bells and whistles and the after effects to give us this show that we are all very proud of. So again, thanks for noticing. And yeah, Andrea, she's amazing. She is an awesome, awesome, talented voice director, and she also brings a ton to it. I mean, we would not be getting the performances, you know, that we get without the amazing talent that she brings to it. You know, she definitely is somebody we love working with and are very happy to continue to work with. So
on the subject of this show being of feature quality in terms of its visual design and execution and the audio and all that, have you guys thought about reaching out to the Fathom Events people? I mean, you know, Doctor Who has enjoyed several Fathom Events releases over the years. You know, this is not an unprecedented thing. Is this something that might help bring even more people to Netflix to check this show out, put it in theaters?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I honestly, I've had my nose to the grindstone so much, you know, getting this show made that, you know, any of those discussions I'm sure would go through like Seth Fowler and his group and the marketing team and things of how else they want to like present this to the rest of the world. But, you know, hey, anything that brings more eyes to this and gets us more attention, you know, I'd definitely be all for. And I'm sure that, you know, they're thinking of all types of ways to, you know, continue to, you know, get this show known to the rest of the world. So,
okay.
So as a line producer, isn't one of your jobs to make sure it's on time and on budget?
You better believe it, buddy. That is why I have many sleepless nights. You know, I dream about money and I dream about schedules. That's what I do. So. Mm.
So can you describe a little bit more about what your actual, you know, job as a line producer is? Because some of the fans might not know what that is.
Yeah, because you know what? When I was in college, I did not know that this position even existed. I did not know what this was. All I knew that at age 8, eating my cereal and watching my Voltron and other various awesome cartoons from them, that it was just a dream that I would be able to work in animation. And I really, forgive me if I go astray a little bit here, just to kind of talk through like how I got to that position.
That's fine.
Because it is one of those things to kind of tell people about, that there are jobs in the animation industry that aren't necessarily drawing or doing a voice or writing the scripts. You know, mm-hmm. There are plenty of people who become line producers who move into productions who go, you know what, I really like to write or I like to draw, but maybe my skill level isn't quite to the level where I could do it for 8 to 10 hours a day, 5 to 6 days a week. Because you also have to remember, like, if you're an artist, like, you have to be creative all the time. And right. It really is when you have to hit a deadline, like, we're not making nuts and bolts here where, you know, it's the same thing every day. Like, we're trying to create new stories and new designs, and to be able to be creative all the time, it is such a taxing business, you know? So I didn't know what I wanted to do. I changed my major like 6 times in college. I at first thought I wanted to be a doctor, and then I thought I wanted to be an actor pretending to be a doctor, and then I thought I wanted to be a Spanish translator, and then I didn't know what else to be. So I was all over the place. I ended up majoring in theater and minoring in Spanish, and my dad's a real estate appraiser in Columbus, Ohio. So I always figured, like, you know what, worst case scenario, I could go be a real estate appraiser. And, sure. You know, I would have had a pretty simple life in Columbus, Ohio, appraising real estate, coaching lacrosse on the side, and maybe, you know, DJing or working as a events, something or other at any type of sports bar or something like that. So those were the thoughts I had, because again, I didn't think that there was a way for me to get into the animation industry, because I didn't write per se. And I, you know, I wrote on the side, but I wasn't confident I could do it as a profession. I definitely couldn't draw, and any voiceover work I had done, I did as a little kid. I actually got to do a Slimer toothpaste. I think you can, it might be able to YouTube it, but I did a Slimer toothpaste commercial as a little kid. And I remember, like, it was the first one I ever did, and I remember watching Saturday cartoons, and my commercial came up, and I was like, this is amazing. and then puberty hit, and the voice changes, and, you know, I didn't really pursue that too much more. So I'm in college, and I'm at Xavier University is where I started. Mm-hmm. And my RA, who was a year ahead of me, one day we're having, like, a hall meeting, and I'm sitting there, and we have this meeting, and then afterwards he goes, by the way, I have an extra ticket to see this band named Cracker. Are there any Cracker fans here? And I'm like, that's like my favorite band. And so this my RA and I, his name's Kip Nascasi, we struck up this friendship because of the band Cracker. And it turned out like he was an art, like a marketing major and an art minor. And when he graduated, he packed up his Dodge Daytona and paved a road out to Los Angeles and volunteered at the animation celebration that they used to have in Pasadena. And from there, he gets a job at Klasky Chupo and gets a PA position. And he calls me and he's like, bro, you know what? There are other positions in animation. Like, you could work in animation if you wanted to. And I'm like, wait, what? I could work? I'm not a drawer. He's like, dude, that's fine. So Kip went on to become a background designer. And I think he lives in Vegas with his wife. And he's writing children's books. And he does a lot of freelance stuff for, like, Family Guy and things like that. But he gave me that confidence of like, hey, I could get into this. So when I graduated school, I did the same thing he did. I packed up my car and I moved out to LA and got a job as an internship at Klasky Chupo. And all the while, I'm still not sure what a producer does, what a coordinator does, what any of those positions do. But I get a job as an intern, and then it parlays its way into becoming a PA on the Wild Thornberrys movie. And now that I'm a PA, I'm seeing what there's all these other positions in animation, especially when you're working on a feature. But guess what? There are lawyers. What? Uh-huh. That work in animation. There are accountants. What? That work in animation. There are IT guys that work in animation. There's this bevy of different jobs that you can have and still work in this amazing industry. So, you know, once I started learning what all these different things were, I knew like, hey, production is what I want to do. My job in production is that of a service industry. I'm there to service the artists, the directors, in whatever way they need help. So a good person, if there's people listening out there that are like, hey, I would like to get into animation, the attitude to have is, how can I be of service today? You know, and how can I be of service to the production, whether you're an artist or whether you're in production? So the job that I have now, so I tell all that to tell where I'm at now, is the job of the producer. Really, I'm responsible for the schedule, the budget, and the people. So when you go to start producing a show, usually you're hoping that, you know, the producer, the line producer, the executive producers, they're kind of like the tripod or whatever that holds the production up, hopefully. And so we are, if we were a Voltron lion, we'd be the legs, right? Because we're there to kind of hold up the production. So what normally happens is, and, you know, whoever I'm working with, whether it's, you know, the directors of physical animation here or whatever, we work together on a budget and we go, hey, we have this amount of money that we want to spend on a show. And then we put together a schedule, and that schedule goes, okay, well, if we're going to deliver by here, I'm going to need this many designers, this many, storyboard artists, this many of a production team. So you start to put together what your game plan is. So you have a cake that you want to make. So you figure out what ingredients and how you want the cake to taste. And then you start putting all those ingredients together and you kind of put it in the oven and you see what you get out. And then you kind of put the icing and the sprinkles on, and then you hope that the public loves it. But when it comes to producing, there's three stages of production. You have your pre-production, you have your main production, and then you have post-production.
Right.
And if I'm boring you guys, I apologize.
No, not at all. Not at all.
There's definitely a lot to it.
Honestly, Benjamin, this is a very unique perspective into the making of shows and how to get into the industry. And I think we and our listeners will find this fascinating. So please continue.
Awesome. So when it comes to making a cartoon, with this Voltron show, the first thing you need to figure out beforehand is, all right, what is this show going to be? We obviously had somewhat of a blueprint of just, you know, hey, the canon is it's these five characters. They are all in lions that form a giant robot, and they fight Zarkon and, you know, the evil forces. So we know that, and we go, okay, so are we doing, is this all CG? Is this all 2D? Okay, no, we're doing a CG hybrid show. Okay, so what does that mean? So that means each show starts with a premise. And while that premise is going on, we're also knowing we got to build these lions in CG. We got to build the Voltron in CG. And a lot of the reasons, just so you, I'm sure you guys probably know, is that a lot of times the best reason to build something in CG is because we're moving it in perspective a lot of times. And right, drawing that stuff in perspective and making it look good is really, really tough. So a lot of these things that are moving a lot, we want to build in CG so that when we're moving it in perspective, it makes sense. It obviously saves time for the artists who are actually drawing the show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So once that premise is done, you know, we get that approved, like, hey, is this the direction we want the story to go? From there, we go into an outline of the script. From there, you have the first draft going on. And usually when that first or second draft's going on is when we break down the script into characters, props, backgrounds. So when we're building that script, we also know, like, hey, is this show going to be producible? Like, are we asking for 100 new characters and 80 new backgrounds and 80 new props? Well, beforehand, as we're making the show, we know, like, hey, we have to figure out just how big this show can be. Because if we had all the time in the world and all the money in the world, we could have as many backgrounds and as many characters as we want. Well, we know with a show like Voltron, we need to stay somewhere in that 30 range, 30 new backgrounds, 30 new characters, 30 new props. And, you know, it can give or take here or there every episode. But we know when we're doing the scripts, hey, writers, don't go crazy. We got to stay in this world. And once that happens, we start our breakdown process, like I mentioned, and design start. So we're roughing out new environments that we've never seen so that when, you know, once the record draft is done, once we've assembled the edited master reel, which is kind of works as a radio play that the board artists listen to while they're storyboarding, it helps them understand how the acting should be with the record. We're also giving the storyboard artists those rough designs so they have ideas of, you know, size comparison and what those environments are going to be that they're going to be telling that visual story with. Once we get those rough boards in, we're noting those rough boards. From there, it goes into, they clean up the storyboards. Once the cleanups are done, they come in for more approvals and more revisions, to which we build like an animatic. And that animatic, you know, if your listeners aren't too familiar, it is basically a version that's of the storyboard that's linked to the audio track that plays as a little QuickTime movie.
Right.
Yeah. And so from there, that's where all the magic is now happening, because that's where we really tweak everything. We really time everything to the best of our abilities. And once we lock that animatic, we also then have a final breakdown for designs where we're like, hey, what designs were added to this episode so that now our designers know exactly what they have to design and they know exactly just how big this show is. We then, you know, ship that animatic over to our studio in Korea, Studio Mir, who that basically ends the pre-production process. So the designs that we did, the animatic, the storyboards, the records, the script, that was all part of the pre-production process. So now we send all those ingredients over to Studio Mir, and they'll start what's called the layout process. And that's basically kind of what it sounds. They take every scene and they kind of like lay it out and they put it in, you know, what the aspect ratio should be so that everything stays consistent. And they start basically, you know, doing the magic of actually drawing all the stuff. So once that's done, once the layout is cleaned up, now it's going into key animation. So the layout basically spells out a lot of poses and such. It also spells out perspective and all those things that the animators need for when they take it over. So once it's done there, it goes into a key animation stage where, again, it's just that. It's the key. So if it's me, you know, grabbing the phone, it's the pose of me holding the phone and then from the receiver and then the pose of it, me holding the phone to my ear. After that happens, that's when we go into that in between. So it's all the different, you know, iterations from the phone receiver to my ear. While that's going on, the stuff that they did in layout, like the Bee Gees, are being painted so that when that animation cleanup gets done, it also then goes through what's called a model checking process. And that model checking is just that, where they're looking at these models and going, hey, when they drew Lance, does he work? Is he in perspective? Is he, you know, is his eyebrows the way that they're supposed to be? So once that's done, it goes into, you know, basically ink and paint is happening from there. So they don't want to paint something that isn't correct. So it gets painted and then it goes into this wonderful world of compositing. And it's where they're putting rubber to the road, man. They're making all the beautifulness and they're putting all the little sparkles and all the, you know, the glints and the, you know, they're putting the little motions on different things that really sweeten the deal a lot. And from there, they export those QuickTimes for us that they then deliver to us, which are known as our take ones. And that is kind of the quick and dirty version of the main production process. And then from there, it goes into post. And once we get it into post, you know, that's where we're getting it. We're calling the retakes. We're sending those back to Mir, who are going to, you know, fix whatever needs that we have. We'll have creative retakes and we'll have technical retakes. Technical retakes are where they maybe didn't quite understand our note or, you know, there were errors of omission that they just, you know, didn't happen to maybe see while they were doing. And the creative ones are the ones where we are like, hey, we need this to look a little bit different. It's on us. We'll take responsibility for that. Once we lock that picture, we send it off to our incredible composer who are, you know, Brad and Brian, who again, bring all those things to life and really put the gravity and the, you know, that feeling and stuff to those scenes. While it's going on, then we also send it to get spotted for ADR. To where we're picking, hey, where are some sessions that we need to do some automated dialogue, you know, replacement? What are some scenes we want to punch up? What are some scenes we need to add some of the grunts and some of the, you know, some of that stuff that again adds
more realism,
the sprinkles to this cake. That's it, just more of it. And from there, we have then, you know, our effects pass where again we send it to our incredible studio Atlas, who does our, you know, effects pass and does our final mix and bake it and send it out to the world, to Netflix, and we hope that the world loves it. So that's that quick and dirty. So basically my job is to make sure all that happens and that all that stuff happens within the cost that we have associated to that episode, that it works within the schedule that we have, and that I have all the right people and personnel in place to handle all those responsibilities. So
my goodness.
Yeah.
Do these people ever get vacations?
Well, you know, we try. We definitely try to give them vacations. And I had to get married to get a honeymoon for my vacation last, you know. My wife was like, look, we're taking a honeymoon. And my wife is actually a casting director at Nickelodeon.
Wow.
So she is very busy as well. But our vacation was our honeymoon, which was awesome. And we do encourage the crews to take vacations as much as possible. And when we do that, you know, we just, again, we are really a strong team on this show where if somebody is taking a vacation or somebody's taking some days off, we definitely lean on each other because of the strong relationships that we have to kind of help with each department. So like this team has been working together, you know, for the most part, most people on this team, we work together on Legend of Korra. So we were kind of, I'd like to say a pretty well-oiled machine coming together, and all the new people that we brought in have definitely, you know, added some really positiveness to this production. So it's an awesome team to work with, and I really couldn't be more happy to be on this team. So we definitely try and build each other up and, you know, support each other as much as we can. And I definitely encourage vacations, but unfortunately, I don't know that Joaquin and Lauren take many of them.
Oh, jeez. Well, I mean, the end result speaks for itself. I mean, the whole team from start to finish just does an incredible job with this series.
And that's what I want to say too. Like my production team, they work, and the production team does not get very much, you know, credit or praise, but Aaron Wan, who is our storyboard and animatics coordinator, and Lauren Gerard, who's our color and CG coordinator, and Lika Luong, who is our design coordinator for black and white, and my production supervisor, Nora, and, you know, our PA, you know, Alex, like they all are all part of, you know, they all add little pieces here or there that really allow, you know, the machine to run. And a lot of times, like, those are the, you know, the positions that don't get the praise that they deserve. So when you see those names in the credits, you should know that all those people work super hard, you know, to get this product out to the world. So I really want to thank them, as well as the whole creative team that works on it, is, you know, being such an awesome asset to me and to Joaquin and to Lauren. And we definitely, all that process that I explained, there's no way we could do it, no way, without all that help. And so everybody is a big piece to this Voltron robot.
You know, we've had Christine Behan on the show before, and we are very interested in talking with other people who may not get the widespread kudos that, you know, the voice actors or Andrea Romano or obviously the executive producers tend to get. We would love to talk with more people who help make this amazing show happen. So we're all fascinated by how this show comes about. So this is just, this is great stuff. So thank you.
Absolutely. And I'd be happy to, you know, get any of the people that would be interested in just hearing they're part of the puzzle too. So
thank you.
Yeah. And have you actually gotten a chance to come out to any of those conventions like WonderCon or New York Comic Con or anything like that to see the reactions of the fans when they see these things?
I was at WonderCon when we were first, I was at the first WonderCon that we did. That obviously was amazing. I missed the last WonderCon, which would have been even more sweet. And so I can't believe, it's hard for me to say that being in this industry for so long that I've never actually been to Comic-Con, but I definitely need to go. There's always something crazy that's going on, like a wedding or something that, you know, it's hindered, but I hope that everybody I know is already married now, so I don't have to take those breaks during those times. And I ran a youth program at the parish that I belonged to for a long time, so a lot of weekends were always really hard to get away for these things. So, but I know that first WonderCon was amazing to hear that reaction, and it really was so gratifying. And I can tell you that it really, like, rejuvenates the team. Like, when fans send us stuff, and when, I don't know if Christine or anyone mentioned before, but we have like a fan art wall here. And if we see really cool fan art, like, we print it out and we put it up there. And I don't know if you know this, but we actually hired someone whose fan art we saw.
Really?
We hired a storyboard revisionist named Rachel Pack, who goes by the name of Char. We were looking for a revisionist, and we saw her work on, whether it was Tumblr or something like that, and we were like, who is this person? We need to meet this person.
Wow.
And it turned out she was living local, and we reached out and basically were like, okay, well, you can draw these characters as well as we can, so come on board. So
that's so right. Cool.
Yeah, it was really a cool story to go, like, to let the fans know, like, we actually look at this stuff. Like, And if you're good, we're trying to keep track of you, because, hey, you know, part of my job, part of all that is to bring the talent into this industry. So if you are that talent, we want to find you. You know, if you are that person that wants to be part of the animation industry and has a really good head on your shoulders and know how to take direction and knows how to take notes and wants to be of service to a production, like, we are looking for those people. You know, it may not be on this show, but it may be, you know, you never know down the line. Good people are good people. And that's, you know, part of my job is to find and employ those people. So
that's great. Wow.
That's incredible. You probably heard from the rest of the crew about the second WonderCon and how loud it was.
Yes, absolutely. It makes me so happy for those guys too, because when we're sitting in our offices here and we're sitting in the building, like, sometimes you need to hear that. Like, it's so great for them to, because, you know, you're making this stuff, you're working crazy hours, you're, you know, putting all this effort into it, And, you know, it goes out to Netflix and you read comments online here, there, and it's like, okay, cool. So people seem to like it. But when we get out there and you get to hear those fans and you're like, wow, this is really, it just adds so much to the morale. We're so appreciative to those people that come out to those things and want to show their support. And it really, like, it's because of the fans that we get to keep drawing stuff and working with all these super talented people for a living. Like, I get paid money to make things that I love, and it's because of the fans, you know, caring and showing that care. And it's just, it's awesome, man. And we're so appreciative to, you know, like I said, all the love and the support that we get from them. And it's from the bottom to the top, you know. It's exciting for the PAs to see, like, oh my gosh, like, people are paying attention. And it's awesome for to the top, you know, to our executives here and to Joaquim and Lauren that are just like, wow, man, like, this, when we get that reaction, it makes it all worth it. And it's fun stuff, man. And we're, like I said, we're really appreciative to this fan base, and really to you guys also for helping stoke that fan base, you know, to keep this alive and, you know, to give the fans a little bit more insight to the people that are creating this show. So I want to thank you guys for the job that you're doing too.
Well, thanks.
Thank you very much.
We have a blast doing this and interacting with fans and obviously interacting with folks such as you. This is a real, it's amazing for all of us.
One of the greatest joys in doing this is being able to get that interaction with the fans, because we have the fans on the show. We have the fans that we've interacted with at the conventions. And of course, you know, being able to come back to you guys who are making the show and be able to say the fans are really excited and they keep growing in numbers. And you keep on seeing more and more fan art, more fan fiction, more cosplay, everything that you can imagine worldwide.
Hey, we love it. And, you know, it's again, it's stuff like that that really fuels this fire for us to put our noses to the grindstone and just keep going. You know, when it's those late nights and we're like, you know, putting this extra hour or two into this scene, we know that it's going to make it worth it, you know, and it's something that, you know, again, like I said, everybody on this show is just a big fan of the show, from the PAs to the execs to the, you know, to the voice talent to Andrea. Like, everybody is really in on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a passion project. And as I sit here and talk to you guys, I'm literally looking at my Castle of Lions that I had from 1984.
Oh, and awesome.
My Zarkon in his original packaging that I had to buy on eBay because I had opened mine multiple times. And, you know, and that's something I've had even when I was working on Korra. Like, if you walked into my office, the first thing you saw was the Castle of Lions before I had any inkling they were going to make this, the DreamWorks was going to bring this back to life. So it really couldn't have been a more perfect union of people to be working on this show. So it's, you know, it's a special time. And like I said, I've known Joaquim and Lauren for a long time, and they really are some of my best friends in the animation industry. And Joaquim and I and Lauren, we started together on Justice League Unlimited. It was Joaquim's first job that he was directing on, and my first time being a coordinator, and Lauren's first time as a board artist. And, you know, Joaquim and I, we share a common love of wrestling, old school WWF wrestling.
Oh, and, yeah.
Old school, you know, arcade games and things like that. And we struck up an immediate friendship. And I mean, we really became fast friends. And, you know, we've stayed friends this whole time. And so when you get to work with some of your best friends and work on a project that you love, like, it really, you want to make your friends happy. You know, you want to make them proud of what you're doing. You know, I'm just so appreciative too, that when they were offered this position, that, you know, I was the first name that they thought of to go, hey, we want Benjamin to come on with us. And it really is a special thing for me to get to work on, because as a kid, my cousins and I, we played Voltron, and my cousin Charles would always get to be the leader. He was always Keith. And then my cousin Randy got to be Lance, and my cousin Jimmy was Hunk. And then my cousin Annie was Allura. And because I was the smallest and I had glasses, I had to be Pidge.
Oh.
And I always wanted to be Lance. Nothing wrong with Pidge, but Lance was my favorite. So when I came on here, I'm like, if we're ever doing scratch records, I'm playing Lance. Nice. I want to be him. So,
did you have to mimic the Pidge voice when you played
Pidge? I did. Looks like he bit off more than he could chew. You know, that's nice. One of my favorites that he would say. So
that's your best Neil Ross, huh?
Yes, we would try and get into the character as much as possible, running around on my cousin's 52-acre farm, which... Can you believe our parents just let us run around with no cell phones, no anything on a 52-acre farm, just running around for 8 hours and then, you know, come back and, you know, just shooting each other with BB guns and all those kind of things. And, you know, it's like I said, so this show, Voltron, really has a special place in my heart. And that's why, like, if I was ever going to do a podcast or ever get to do video commentary for a show, like, this is the one right now, you know? So again, I'm very appreciative for you guys for reaching out to find out just what a live producer does and stuff.
Yeah.
So. I know the listeners appreciate it.
I was just going to say, we would love to have you on at some point, maybe to help us review an episode at some point.
Absolutely, man. Like, because, you know, and I could, you know, maybe share a few little tidbits are here or there, like, oh man, we almost did this or we almost did that. Like, you know, that's kind of the fun thing, is when the little things here, there, like where a coordinator got to name one of the robe beasts or something, you know, because we're sitting in a design meeting and it's like, well, we got this robe beast, and it's like, does anybody have a name for it? And somebody throws out a name, and that coordinator now can live in knowing that that person named the robe beast that we had, you know. And so it's fun stuff like that, you know, I know that when I'm fans of shows, that finding out that information, it's always really kind of cool to hear, like, oh wow, that's awesome, that, yeah, that's how they got that, or that's how they came right up with that name. So
like the commentary they used to have on the DVDs while you were watching the movie or something like that.
Yeah, when we were on Justice League Unlimited, like we had all these like Green Lantern characters, you know, that were from the same planet, and I remember just, they never got named on the show, but Joaquin and I sat there and we named like 10 of these characters just for the heck of it. And it was like, that was fun. So, you know, if I were a fan of Justice League Unlimited, it'd be cool to watch and go, hey, that guy was named this, that guy's named that, that guy's named that. So it's, yeah. And that's, you know, when you're on the inside, it's fun to share some of that stuff to people so that they also can kind of be in on that if they are a part of that fandom, to know those extra little nuggets here or there. So
that is so cool.
So one last question we want to ask you before you go.
Sure.
What episode are you most proud of as a person in your position on the show?
Ah, man, that is a really good question. I'm going to take a different answer. It's to be honest, it's not one episode. It's the culmination of all of them, that we really do try and keep the quality up on every single one. So if you're looking for a favorite episode, you know, it's, I really love origin story stuff. So mm-hmm. Watching those first three, like, and because we did it, like we were able to get that 2D render, or that, you know, that 2D render on those CG assets, like that, when we got our first Lion animation back and we saw it, it was like, awesome, we're there. So, you know, just seeing those first three come together was such like an amazing thing. Obviously, my mom and family love the Space Mall one. Mm-hmm. I really do love that one, just because we wanted to do like an 80s throwback something or other. Mm-hmm. And that was the best way to do it. Was it's just a totally, like, you know, an episode where they dress as space pirates and they go to this mall and they go, and you know, it's like those little things that you picked up on, that aliens wearing like an Area 51 hat. And yeah. I don't know if you know, but you know, and the reason that they actually had a cow in that store was actually because, you know, every time you hear about an alien abduction story, it's mm-hmm. like the aliens are abducting farmers, or they're going to like a farm to get people. So
right,
the
livestock
idea was,
and all that.
Exactly. So the idea of why they had a cow in that store was because, hey, it's like, you know, that's where an alien would have abducted that cow or a bunch of cows. And that's why you get a free one with every purchase, you know, so.
Yeah, well, because they don't want them.
Right, right. Because what are they going to do with them?
Well, what I love is that not only is that cow called Kaltenecker, but the alien calls them all Kaltenekkers.
Right, yes.
So that's like, that's what they think the species is called.
And it's like they knew that I have like 7 brothers and sisters and I have, you know, a ton of aunts and uncles. It's like, it's the whole Kaltenekker clan that's being abducted up there. So
it's also your name that we see first at the end credits. Whenever the end credits start coming up, we always see your name first.
It's before Netflix shrinks the end credits down. You get full screen, buddy.
I honestly, like, that wasn't me. That's just what they do here at Post. So I remember like people being like, oh my gosh, you get the first credit. I'm like, wow, yeah, that's pretty cool. Like, you know, so that wasn't my doing, but that's how they do it here. And that was really exciting, especially for my family and friends who are back there that get to go, hey, I know that guy, or, you know, and it's, yeah. So if it makes my mom happy, it makes me happy.
And now I can tell my son, I know that guy.
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can say, hey, you know what? You know, I went to school with that. You know, we were at the same school together back in the day. So.
Oh, yeah. That's a really cool thing. It is such a small world.
It is, man. We have a person here at DreamWorks that works in the marketing department that I believe he's head of like character design and stuff for that. And I was on a video conference call with him one day, and I'm wearing a Dayton t-shirt, and he looks and he goes, hey, why do you have a Dayton shirt on? I'm like, because I graduated there. And he's like, I graduated there too. And I'm like, I didn't know anybody else worked in this industry, in the animation industry from Dayton. And turns out there was. So
that is so cool.
Very exciting.
Go UD.
So that's right, man.
All right. Well, we want to thank you, Benjamin, for joining us on Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. And we really mean it, that you can come back if you want to help us review an episode.
We'd love to do that.
Rock and roll, guys. Hey, thank you for the time. And again, I just want to thank my amazing production team and my amazing artists and Studio Mir and all the people associated with this. And, you know, we're really proud of this. And thank you to all the fans that give us all the support that fuels the fire to make this show. So take care, everybody.
What a great interview with Benjamin Kaltenecker. That was totally awesome. And we went over so much stuff. I'm going to have to listen to this about 5 times before I get it all down.
Yeah, it's like when you start a new job and, you know, that first day of orientation, or let's face it, the first week of orientation, if not more, you know, you're kind of fire hosed with information. This was all amazing, amazing stuff. I've followed a lot of behind the scenes and making of books and videos for favorite shows and movies over the years. So I had a lot of familiarity with the very basics of how this stuff works. But from an animation perspective alone, you know, from that perspective, I wasn't as knowledgeable. And it was so great to hear Benjamin Kaltenecker walking us through how an episode of our favorite series is made.
Right. And you're talking about the budgeting, the schedule, the people. And he even did it from like ground, you know, from when they just started doing all of these different episodes to, you know, having to build their team and then determining how much they were going to spend on each episode and then trying to fit all the pieces into that budget and then scheduling all these people and things that have to happen in a specific order. And then also, you know, coming up with the pre-production, main production, and post-production and until it comes out and gets released on Netflix.
It's really incredible. I truly enjoyed talking with Benjamin, learning much more about how this all happens. It really gave me a new level of appreciation for absolutely everyone who brings this show to life.
Yeah, I mean, that was really cool. I remember I had the opportunity to interview Dan Povenmire and Swampy Marsh, who were the creators of Phineas and Ferb.
Hmm.
Do you remember that show?
I remember it. I've not seen it, but I do remember it.
Okay, so Phineas and Ferb was on the Disney Channel, and these people were working for Disney Animation.
Right.
So they once did a video that they released on YouTube, which was all about their steps in animating the show, because a lot of people had asked them in a lot of interviews, what is the process that you guys go through to create an episode?
Uh-huh.
So they created this animate and rap, and it was just a rap of them doing everything that they do for a show from, you know, step one to the last step.
That is amazing.
And it was very entertaining, number one, because these guys are really good songwriters, number one.
Mm-hmm.
But they basically showed all these people who had worked on the staff and everything as they're going through the process of the things that they have to do in order to make the show. And part of it was the same thing that happens on Voltron Legendary Defender, where, you know, the animation gets sent overseas to another studio. I don't know who it is for Disney Animation, but of course, for Voltron Legendary Defender, it's Studio Mir in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
But that whole process of one episode can take like 8 or 9 months.
It's really amazing that they pull off a series and turn it around in what seems to us like record fast time. You know, we sit around waiting, oh no, 6 months or 8 months between seasons. But, you know, this stuff has to get queued up well in advance of any of the drops on Netflix. So they've all been working hard for a very long time to make this show happen.
Right. The stuff that you just got in this interview with Benjamin Kaltenecker is stuff that you may not get anywhere else.
Yeah. And we are, frankly, very privileged to have been able to speak with Benjamin and learn how these shows come about. And I was very inspired by his words about the various ways that people can get involved in the animation industry. I mean, when you think of animation and what it might take to work on an animated series or an animated film, the first thing you think is, gee, I need to draw well, or I need to animate well. And that's not necessarily true. There are so many roles that need to be filled to make your favorite animated productions happen. And it's so neat to hear that firsthand from someone who is working on a series in a capacity that does not involve actually drawing the characters or environments or whatnot. It's truly amazing.
Right. And the fact that he also pointed out that there was an artist out there who was a fan artist, and they keep all the fan artist stuff and they put it up on the walls and everything around them, and it inspires them, you know, to do better at their job, because these are some pretty creative and pretty talented fan artists out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they even hired one of them.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
So, you know, that's truly incredible right there.
Yep.
When Benjamin was starting to talk about this stuff, and then he stopped himself and said, is it okay to keep going about this? And I'm like, are you kidding me? This is gold.
Heck yeah, seriously. The voice actors and the showrunners and, you know, some of the other people behind the scenes do get a lot of attention, and deservedly so. But there are so many wonderful people who bring Voltron Legendary Defender to life, and all of them deserve a moment in the spotlight to talk about what they do and how what they do contributes to the whole of bringing the show to us through Netflix and DreamWorks. I'm so glad we got to talk with Benjamin.
Yeah, and I was glad I asked the question about vacations too, because it seems like a lot of these people work really hard and many long hours in order to be able to bring these shows to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to let them know that, you know, we really appreciate the effort that you guys put into these shows and the level of detail that goes into them, because it makes all the difference. It's all those little things combined that make this a truly remarkable show.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, we do hope that these people do get some vacations every once in a while.
That would be nice.
But when they're working so hard as they are, and they've got their heads down and they're focused and everything, it is good to know that there are fans out there that are chomping at the bit for any little bit of Voltron they can get. And that it really inspires these people that are working on the show to keep going and do even better.
Yeah, so to anyone listening who happens to work on Voltron Legendary Defender, or who has worked on previous Voltron programs, who's worked on tie-in merchandise, you know, in any capacity that has helped enrich our fan experience with Voltron, thank you very much from the bottoms of our hearts. We truly appreciate the work that you do. Thank you.
Yes, I can say that tenfold and never, you know, stop saying it. And I'd never get enough of the credit that they truly deserve for doing this. It really takes a village. And we're talking about all the people that are at Studio Mir, all the people that are DreamWorks Animation, all the people involved in, and like Benjamin said, you know, even down to like lawyers and accountants and marketing people and PR people, down to the smallest job there is to where you're just trying to service the show and make it a good show.
Mm-hmm.
So we really appreciate all the efforts of all the people involved in Voltron Legendary Defender. You should all get an amazing amount of credit for this.
Yes, and of course, a tip of the hat to people who've worked on past shows, too. I know one of our regular listeners out there is Franklin Kofod, so special tip of the hat to you, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, and everybody who whoever started Voltron in the first place, we're talking about Peter Keefe and John Teichman and Ted Koppler and, you know, all the people that got things rolling with the original Voltron show, which was started from, you know, those Japanese shows. So It's just an amazing thing that they captured lightning in a bottle back in 1984 when it became the number one syndicated show.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're on Netflix and it's worldwide and they've captured lightning in a bottle once again.
They have indeed.
That's a pretty rare thing for the same franchise.
Totally agree.
Yeah. So, you know, going on from Benjamin Kaltenecker, I wanted to let you know we had just recently had our Voltron fan artist spotlight.
Yes.
So we just recently got an email from one of the fans. Her name is Jen G.
Okay.
And she just sent us an email, and I want to share this with you and see what you think.
All right.
It says, "Hello, Mark and Greg. Just wanted to start by saying I love listening to your podcast and was listening to your fan art spotlight with Mel today and wondered if you ever thought of doing a cosplayer spotlight. Maybe talking to someone about how they created their costumes and the process of why or how. I would offer myself up for it, but I only have a Lance and a Keith working on a Shiro right now. I don't know if I'm qualified. LOL. Might be a fun thing. Let's Voltron." So thank you, Jen G, for sending that in to us. And what do you think, Greg?
Number one, thank you, Jen G, not just for reaching out to us, but for the very kind words about the podcast. We enjoy and appreciate each and every one of our listeners, so thank you. As far as a cosplay spotlight, I think it's a wonderful idea. You know, we've already interviewed Law Renz, who designed and wore that amazing Voltron costume back at New York Comic Con 2016. And he also designed and constructed some really awesome Paladin armor suits that were also featured at that convention. We've talked with Sarah Federer, who has an amazing Shiro cosplay. And I'm sure that some of the people, Nicole, who helped us review an episode recently, had some amazing costumes as well. So we've already sort of unofficially been doing that. I can't forget Zilla with her Pidge cosplay.
yeah.
Yeah, which is, she was one of the very first Voltron Legendary Defender cosplayers I noticed and was just blown away by her outfit. And of course, her fiance, who cosplays as Shiro.
Right.
You know, I think that's a great idea. You know, if folks want to reach out to us for a general fan spotlight, that is great. We would love to talk with you. I feel the same way. I think you do, obviously, about the fan artist spotlight, since that was your idea to introduce to the podcast, of course. And I think this is a great idea, too. What do you think?
Yeah. So, like I said, I'm in favor of, you know, we talk about all these fans that do tremendous amounts of creative things. You know, we're talking about fan fiction, we're talking about cosplay, we're talking about fan artists, we're talking about people that are taking some of these things that happen in the show. And even Bex Taylor Klaus talked about this. You know, there's Voltron memes out there too. I mean, there's all kinds of things that are being created, you know, whether they're videos or images or stuff like that, where a lot of things are being mashed together.
Mm-hmm.
And Bex had talked about one of her favorite Voltron memes was the one that incorporated Voltron Legendary Defender and Bob's Burgers.
Yeah, fun stuff.
Have you gotten to see that one yet?
I have not yet seen it.
It's pretty well done because everything is synced up really well with the lip flaps and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely appears that that was edited in, you know what I mean? Like the lip flaps and everything like that, because when you look at the original scene from that Voltron Legendary Defender episode where Lance got hurt,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Shiro's there trying to, you know, revive him, there were never really any words that came out of Lance's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bob's Burgers things that he is saying stuff. So it was just amazing how, you know, well done it was, because it seemed to time well, and it just fit together with what was going on from that Thanksgiving episode from Bob's Burgers.
That's cool. I know that you've done some fun video and audio editing yourself, of course, with the Itsy Bitsy Spider video with Neil Kaplan, you know, as Zarkon doing that.
That was really fun to do.
Yeah, on our YouTube channel. And then, of course, you've got Jack Angel doing Zarkon and Franklin Kofod doing Hagar. Wow.
Yes. Yes, that was cool, too.
Yeah, for Let's Zarkon. And then in the years before I became co-host of this podcast, I did a sort of what-if 1980s Voltron intro that integrated elements of the Lion Force and Vehicle Team in the same opening sequence.
Right.
So I had to stitch together an all-new narrative featuring Peter Cullen, archival stuff of Peter Cullen from other Voltron things. And it's just great fun to do that sort of thing. And although I've not seen this Voltron Bob's Burgers mashup, I would like to check that out.
Yeah. If people like Bex Taylor Klaus are taking notice of those, maybe that's something we want to, you know, talk about on the podcast as well. And then maybe we can feature those people who had done some of those things. So it's always great to get fans on the podcast and start talking about Voltron.
Yeah, and you know, here's another related idea. How about we find a knowledgeable fellow fan to maybe come on the podcast and tell us about that person's favorite Voltron fan fiction?
Yeah, that would be fine too.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be something that person wrote, but just stuff that a fan or maybe a couple of fans have read and greatly enjoyed. You know, I have to confess, fan fiction is not something that I've followed closely in recent years. So I am a total noob when it comes to experiencing Voltron fan fiction in recent years, but I would really like to hear and learn from people who actively read it and possibly also write it. That might be fun to do too in a future episode.
All these creative fans that we have out there that are fans of Voltron, and everybody steps up to the plate and does their own thing. And that's what we love about this, is that, you know, anybody who's doing anything in the name of Voltron, that's cool to us, you know?
Absolutely. So, Jen G, thank you again for your email.
As we say to a lot of people who write to us, if you're doing stuff, and so she has a Lance and a Keith, and she's working on Shiro right now, but she doesn't know if she's qualified. Yes, you're qualified.
Yeah, I mean...
you're a Voltron fan.
Yeah, if you've just made finger puppets of the Altaian mice, you're qualified.
Yes.
I mean, you're costuming your fingers, you know what I mean?
Right. If you've done any kind of cosplay at all, you know, you're qualified.
Yep.
So we don't expect that you're going to have, you know, all of the Paladins and the Voltron like Law did, but... we do expect that you've actually gone out and actually worn it somewhere, and, you know, people have reacted to it.
And of course, we're not exclusive to the new series. If people have costumes, you know, of prior shows, we'd love to see that stuff too.
Yeah, we had Mark Oliver on once, remember? And we talked all about his costume.
That's true. I neglected to mention him a little while back. Yes, he cosplayed as classic 80s Voltron, Lion Force Voltron.
And at the time, that was like the best thing going at New York Comic Con.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, Tara has her Princess Ramel cosplay. And there are creative people from every Voltron era.
Do you remember the group that was at New York Comic Con? It was Tara and Tally and Chitoy and Cryoflight. I mean, all those people had dressed as female versions of the Paladins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Amazing stuff. Yeah.
So it was really cool. So, yes, we would love to have a Voltron cosplayer spotlight. So thank you for the idea, Genji.
And I'd like to extend an invitation to all of our listeners. If you have suggestions or constructive criticism or any ideas about what you'd like to hear on the podcast or maybe see on our YouTube channel, please reach out and let us know.
Okay. And then also, what's going on at the Voltron store right now? It looks like we have some new era hats that are getting a lot of attention right now.
Yes, there's a photo they shared in social media that has a large statue based on the 80s Voltron as designed by Toynami. And on each of the 5 lion heads is a new era hat, which is really cool. I happen to own 4 of the 5 hats in that photograph, all of them except for the red one, just because I just didn't know it was available when I was ordering the other hats. And they are really, really nice. Please check out the Voltron store, store.voltron.com, and check those out.
Have you worn any of those hats out and had people notice it yet?
I've worn a couple of them. Free Comic Book Day was earlier this month, and I remember wearing one of those as I was zipping around with my daughter, and I had the very first, one of the very first Voltron Legendary Defender t-shirts. I think it was from We Love Fine. It was the Voltron chest logo, and there were fans who recognized the hat and the shirt, and they were very interested in talking about Voltron, and of course I am too, so...
Okay, so the Voltron store has New Era hats, and there's plenty of varieties of the new show hats available, right?
Mm-hmm.
We also have been told that there's a couple of new, fun t-shirts out there. One is a manga-style Voltron t-shirt, and one is a vintage Lion Force t-shirt.
Yes, they both look great. They will be mine. Oh yes, they will be mine.
And we will be including links to those t-shirts out on our podcast page for this episode.
Yeah, the manga style shirt is really, it's my favorite of the two, although I love both of them. It has a kind of a four color look, Voltron holding the sword and looking all majestic and awesome. This is classic style, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the backdrop, it looks like the page from a comic book. It's got each of the major hero and villain characters, but it's arranged as if it's a genuine page from an 80s era Voltron comic. And it is really, really cool. So check it out. And of course, the other vintage style one is really nice too.
And of course, they still have stock of the 5.5-inch action figures from Voltron Legendary Defender. So if you haven't gotten your whole collection of all five Lions, check that out.
Right. Plus, of course, my Zax and Lion Attack Voltron and Sword Attack Voltron. I shot a video review of all eight of the basic figures for our YouTube channel, and I love those things. I've got a Black Lion at work sitting next to a Burger King Voltron. They're fun to have on display and fun to fidget with. Far better than those lousy fidget spinners. Let's fidget with Voltron.
Oh, speaking of fidget spinners,
My
son got one of those.
Oh, well, I'm sorry for calling it lousy.
Well, he went to his, they had a field trip to Washington, D.C. Of course, we had to give him some money because he had to be able to pay for food and things like that while he was out there. But he came back with one of those fidget spinners.
Okay. So is it lousy? I'm assuming not.
No. These are actually pretty cool things, all right? It's a craze among kids right now. But I just found out that at my workplace that some of our dev managers had these fidget spinners too.
Huh.
And the reason why, and I think this is what the original reason that these things came out in the first place was that obviously, people like to fidget with their hands, all right? And
sure.
There are people out there that, you know, may not have 100% focus when they're doing things, and it's because their hands need something to do. And believe it or not, we've had studies at work and stuff like that that have shown that if you either play with Silly Putty or Play-Doh, all right, if you work with Play-Doh or Silly Putty or Lego blocks or something like that, when you're in the middle of a meeting, you can actually still heavily focus on everything that's going on in the meeting, but at the same time, your hands are doing stuff, and it's just keeping you from really being distracted.
So I stand corrected about fidget spinners. I actually fidget with little knickknacks all the time. As you were telling me about how they're used, I was sitting here fidgeting with a little teeny tiny transformer that was on my desk, so...
Yeah.
And I do, I must admit, I do fidget with the basic Black Lion figure on my desk at work from time to time.
Right. And I do that too with the basic Lion figures and sometimes even the larger Ultimate Voltron.
Yeah.
It's amazing because these fidget spinners, they're not loud. They spin in your hands and they hardly make any noise at all, even when you spin them really fast.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key there is you're not doing anything to disturb anybody else while you're playing with a fidget spinner. And at the same time, you're still able to concentrate on everything that's going on around you.
All right. Well, that's cool. So then I would encourage everyone to complete your collection of basic Voltron Legendary Defender figures, because then you can fidget with them. And if anyone in a meeting gives you a hard time, then, you know, you can always shoot the little missiles at them.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Be careful not to get too addicted to them, because right now they're coming up with all sorts of designs of them and all that kind of thing. And now they're becoming collectibles.
Oh my goodness. Isn't everything?
So yeah. So don't get too caught up in the craze. Just realize that it's just something fun to work with in your hands while you're doing whatever. Also, there's some schools out there that I've heard have already banned these things.
Are you serious?
And that's kind of defeating the purpose of these things.
Hmm.
Our school hasn't banned them. And, you know, all the kids are allowed to have them whenever.
Huh.
So
I'm very prepared to say, okay, I was wrong. And so I'd like to reach out to our friends at World Events Productions and DreamWorks and encourage them to make Voltron Legendary Defender fidget spinners.
I think it's a perfect combination. I mean, it has three or four fins, or, you know, so to speak, on the spinner. And I think that would be enough to put different designs of different either characters or spaceships or robeasts or, you know, whatever.
Great idea. And in the meantime, get those basic figures. And in all honesty, you know, I sound like I should be on QVC or something, the Quintessence Voltron channel. But in all seriousness, I am absolutely nuts about these Voltron toys. I've got multiples of every single one of them. And every time, like today, I happen to have a little bit of time after work, I spun by a local Toys R Us, I spun by a local Target, and I am so compelled. I've been fighting the urge lately, but to buy even more of the crazy things. You know, I love them. They're so much fun, especially those legendary lions, those combining ones. But those basic figures are so much fun. My Zax is easily my favorite of the eight, although I love them all. And I think that our listeners and fellow fans will too.
Yeah, and I can't wait to start talking about the wave two of toys. You know what I mean?
Oh, geez. Yeah.
It's not until fall, and fall is so far away right now.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I go to these stores and I see these first wave toys that I already own in multiples and think, I want to buy more, but I'm also looking at them and thinking, I want the new stuff that's not out yet either. Bummer. You know, it's just amazing to see them still at mass retail. Just blows my mind. I look forward to seeing what comes next.
Right.
I did notice very quickly that on the Voltron store website, in addition to the manga style and vintage Lion Force shirts, there is a Voltron 84 logo shirt. So
yes.
It's the rainbow logo with the number 84, which is the logo that Netflix has been using for the 12 episode Voltron 84 drop that's available. And so you can get that logo as well.
Which Benjamin Kaltenecker's on.
Yes, he is. And I'm glad we got a chance to mention him again. So yes, that's out there too. And I think I may pick that up too, because who doesn't love Voltron 84?
Right. They tied in with those introductions pretty perfectly, you know, how the old show influenced the new show.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that. If you haven't seen those introductions yet, make sure you check out those introductions to each of those episodes.
Yeah, and while you're at it, stick around and watch the show too.
All right, well, I think that's going to do it for us for this week, and we'll see you all next time on
Let's Voltron!